Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Leah Urbano. I hesitated for a second in between Leah and Urbano because this is take three. Leah Urbano is an amazing person and is also a tongue twister. Try saying Leah Urbano five times fast. And if I am butchering Urbano, if it's Urbano or if it is something that doesn't even look like U-R-B-A-N-O. Yeah, I got it right. Then I apologize. Anyway, Leah is an extremely accomplished artist manager and really nice. I met her at the Warped Party in person after talking to her briefly over Facebook, email, and all that. But I met her at the Warped Party this year with my homie and fellow co-conspirator and co-manager Mike Cubillos. We managed the band Stringer together, and Mike is a legendary publicist. And it was just cool actually seeing her in person, because much of the relationships you have in this industry especially, you don't even get to see people, because you could be a music manager, an artist manager, anything from anywhere. Obviously, if you're in cities like LA or New York or Nashville, there's more people doing what you're doing, but Leah is in none of those places. So I hope to talk about that with her, and I'm really happy she's doing this. I am. I said that before, but I'm saying it again. It's cool that she's doing this. Crimson Management, word up. So the next few weeks, let's see. I'm actually booked. Today is not the day that this episode will be airing. By the time this airs, it'll be about 3 weeks to a month from now, but as of today, which is May 30th, 2018, I'm booked until next year. So thank you all for listening to Waldman's Words. Next week, which is not going to be next week, it's going to be the next week of next week's and next week's, because we pre-record this, we've got Chris Hornbrook, who plays currently drums for Danny Harrison, George Harrison's son. Like, holy cow, Beatles are always going to be my favorite band of all time. He's also played drums for Senses Fail and Poison the Well. So we're going to learn about what it's like being a session drummer hired gun. So that's going to be an interesting talk. The following week, we've got Tazy Phillips, who is a legend in the ska scene down south in the Orange County, Long Beach area. Legend. He was one of the first people to play No Doubt, Sublime, Real Big Fish, you name it, and I'm a ska boy, so I'm really excited to learn more about that. So, you know what? Honestly, that's enough of the future. Let's talk about the present. Leah Urbano is going to be joining us really soon. As always, you could tune in every single Tuesday, 5 o'clock Pacific time, which is my time zone, 8 o'clock Eastern, which is Leah's time zone, and bright and early on Sundays, 5 a.m. Pacific, 8 a.m. Eastern. You can listen to every single episode on Idobe.com. You can also listen to every single episode for free. I mean, it's free on Idobe.com too. This is free for you. It's free for everyone. It's pretty incredible. You can download in the podcast app every single episode. Subscribe. Go ham. And I'm going to eat chicken in a bit. Stick around. Hello. So this has happened a few times lately, but I've mispronounced a last name. So it's Leah Urbano. Urbano, right?
Correct.
Yay. We're starting positive. Thank you, Leah, you, for being on Waldman's Words. I definitely won't screw up the first initial to your name, but I also learned in recording, and you didn't hear this in the intro, that your name is quite a tongue twister. Try saying it like five times fast. I hurt myself.
You don't have to try. It's fine.
Do or do not. There is no.
I give you.
So where are you speaking to me from? Where are you right now?
I am in lovely Western Massachusetts. I am sitting outside and it is a beautiful day. I have flowers all around me, birds, trees, the whole nine. So it's a good day today.
That's awesome. That's really great. I'm inside Adobe Studio and it's comfortably air conditioned, but it rains in Los Angeles maybe six times a year. And today is one of those days. So you are hashtag winning right now. So thank you for that.
Sure. Come visit.
I love Massachusetts. My wife went to Brandeis and we have not been to the state of Massachusetts together ever. No, wait, we have. We skied at a place called Catamount once. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's on the Massachusetts-New York border. So go Massachusetts. Go Massachusetts.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's west. That's even further west from where I am. Awesome.
It's west-western.
Yeah, it's like serious west.
It's like it's like Seattle, Massachusetts.
Yes. Seattle, Massachusetts.
Which is my favorite place to get coffee. Anyway, all right. So let's do this interview thing, even though, you know, I mean, I don't know. I guess I could even talk about this. I just realized this. When someone sends you an email, and my voice just cracked, so go puberty. But when someone sends you an email and they just send a video link or they just cut to the chase right away in an aggressive way, I get turned off. So I'm glad that we kind of like had an appetizer of talking before. So thank you.
Sure.
Sure is the least confident yes. I'll take it.
Yes.
Yes, definitely. Certainly. Spectacular. Okay, so what got you into music? Did you grow up in Western Massachusetts?
I did. Back in a long time ago, there was a really active scene here, and there still is. It's been ongoing for 30 plus years, and you know, I was in high school. I was one of those rebellious punk rock kids, and I moved out when I was 16. Had an awesome apartment with two roommates that were a lot older than I was.
When you were 16, you moved out?
I was 16. Yeah, I moved out when I was 16.
Wow, that is rebellious.
Yeah, yeah. It was one of those. I mean, my mother, I love her to death, and she is my only family member by blood. You know, one day she was like, if you don't like the rules of the house, leave. I'm like, okay, sounds like a good plan to me. Bye.
Peace.
Yeah. And I found this apartment with Rendell and Anthony, and you know, they were in their 20s. They were awesome guys. They protected me. You know, it could have went way wrong, and it didn't. It was a really great experience, and I got into zines. So we used to sit up at the
Maximum
table.
Rock and Roll was mine growing up. I love that one.
Oh, I have further down the line, you might be quite interested in the history.
I'm interested in that because I haven't even said Maximum Rock and Roll, which is one word, but it's also three words, or it's four words because rock and. But I've never even said that on this show, so I am going to shut up and listen.
Okay. So I started doing zines and got really into that. And during that time frame, internet did not exist. We still had phones corded on the wall.
Well, Al Gore invented the internet, so it existed. And I just got to say it. Al Gore in the 60s invented the internet, unless these zines were pre-60s.
Well, you know what I mean.
I do. I was being stupid.
Yeah, it wasn't like... You know what I mean.
I do.
So we actually corresponded with each other through the mail. That was how everybody communicated. So how did you find out about shows? Flyers, things like that.
Postcards. I remember getting postcards for shows from ska bands in the 90s when I signed their actual mailing list, which is snail mail. So yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. With your home address, yep. You know, so finding out about things back then, you had to be connected. You had to do a little dirty work and, you know, really participate in what was going on. You know, you went to every single show. Bands that came through town, they had their 7-inches and their records and you would buy them. This is also pre-CD. So, you know, for me being a young person, it was a really awesome time to be involved in what was going on around here, but also across the country. You know, before I left for California, I did a road trip to Ohio. You know, it was just amazing. So that's kind of how I got into it and would go to shows, put on shows. And back then, I think I was probably, I mean, this predates me moving out. Like when I was 14, I was going to shows. All the older guys would take us all. And, you know, there's this one guy, Russ, who used to pick me up by my belt loop in the pit so I wouldn't get trampled.
Oh, like, wow.
Really awesome people around here. There's so many. And that's when I met Scott Lee. He's been my best friend for over 30 years. And
you met him at a local show? Like, was it for local bands or was it for a bigger band?
He was promoting shows basically out of the womb. Actually.
Wow.
So
that's impressive.
That's how we met. There's like a whole crew of folks that are from here.
I hear doggy. I'm jealous.
Yeah, my dogs are all barking in the house. I'm
Hello.
Sorry.
No. I like it. I think it's great. I actually, fun fact, I was scared of dogs until I moved in with my wife, and she said it was a non-negotiable. We're always going to have a dog. So I acquiesced. So it's cool to hear a dog right now. Yeah. No, I sold out. I sold out to the man. It was great.
I'm glad she kept you. That's wonderful.
I'm glad she kept me too. And kept is a really good word. Anyway, so doggy.
Moving along, living in my little apartment, I finished high school and, kept going to shows, collecting records. I got real into that. I also was pen pals with a lot of folks. One person that you may know, Mike Mowry. Mike mm-hmm. Mowry used to be known as Mike Fight.
He was
Mike
on this Fight, show.
He used to own a record label called Fight Records. And we were pen pals. We used to send cassette tapes through the mail.
That's crazy.
Way back in the day.
I mean, it's pen pals. I remember meeting people at shows on Long Island where I'm from. And I actually formed a band, I guess. You can call it punk, ska, emo, whatever you want to call it. It was like a hybrid. Our saying was that we didn't sound like anyone. We sounded like everyone. We were called We Are Groove Animals, the first band I was ever in that gigged. And I met actually at a show at a venue called Deja One in Mineola on Long Island. And I still talk to some of the people from that band. So meeting people at shows during a pivotal time in your adolescence can really turn into lifelong friendships.
Absolutely. And to this day, I still know Mike very well. There's actually a whole crew of folks that are in the music industry now that I knew way back in the day. And it's a pretty extensive list. So I don't want to go crazy, but it's pretty amazing when people will ask me like, oh, do you know so-and-so? And I'm like, oh yeah, I knew them 20 years ago when they did this. They're like, what? They did that? I'm like, it all goes back to punk rock and hardcore. Like everyone who's cool and awesome at one point was a punk rocker, hardcore kid.
Well, the way I met Mike Cubillos, who actually, when I saw you, I said this in the intro, when we actually met for the first and only time, Leah and I was with Mike Cubillos. And the way that I met Mike Cubillos was that he was the publicist for my band, which was like a pop punk band in 2006. We were called The City Drive. So, and he's been doing it for years as well. And so punk rock keeps people together, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And I back that dude 150%. He's amazing.
I'm with you on that. So Mike, if you are listening, the two people talking now love you like a milkshake. So thank you for that. You're the shit. So
totally.
So I guess continue. When you were going to shows and when you were being pen pals and when you met Scott and when you met everyone, what were you doing for income at that time?
I was working a retail job. Actually, no. My first job, I volunteered at this place called the World Market. I wanted to work there so bad, and my mom was like, "You just need to be persistent." I'm like, "Okay." And I was like totally out of my comfort zone. And I went for it. I just kept badgering these poor women. I'm like, hire me, hire me. Well, sure enough, they're like, fine, you can sit in our basement after school and sort clothes for Tibetan refugees. They had thousands and thousands of pieces of clothing at the time for Tibetan refugees. So my job was to sort the clothing, pack it up so that, you know, shirts were in one by size, so on and so forth. And, you know, after about a year, year and a half of that, I was actually running the store when they would leave to go on buying trips because it was the world market. So they went all over the world to find wares to sell in the store. So learned pretty young, persistence definitely perseveres. So that was my job. Then I moved over to Fashion Bug, which was a retail clothing store up in Greenfield, Mass. And did a little bit of college when I was living up there with my best friend, Lori. And the folks above us, they were hoarders.
Wait, what school was it, though, that you went to college?
Was called Greenfield Community College.
Is that very close to where you grew up?
Yeah, it's just a few towns up the highway north.
And one quick question, though, because I haven't heard anything about Tibet in a long time, but I remember when I was in high school, the Tibetan Freedom Concert. Was this like around that time when everyone was talking about like Adam Yauch?
Probably, yes, I'd say a few years prior. But was all, you know, the early 90s when that was a big, huge thing. And, you know, I grew up in Holyoke, Mass. And then my mom transferred me out in 10th grade and we moved to Northampton, Mass. So very liberal, you know, there's colleges everywhere around here, but you know, Smith College is literally our backyard. And,
oh wow!
You know, very hi. You got me?
No, I said, oh wow. You got me. I was like, wow, emotion of saying cool because Smith is a great school. It's an all girls school, and my friend Nova. Shout out to Nova, who I also have never spoken about on the show. She went there, so go
awesome.
Smith.
Yeah, amazing people. You know, I mean, being so close in age to those students when I was in high school, you know, we used to hang out with a lot of the Smith students. And, you know, it's just for me, every experience, I always try to find the positive in it. And, you know, I look back to those times when, you know, we used to hang out in the park. There was an awesome record store across the street that we'd go buy our vinyl, you know, like just a really good experience. And there's still people that I talk to today that, you know, we were all just teenagers, you know? So, going back, went to Greenfield for a minute, moved in with my best friend, Lori, was still going to shows, still, you know, participating in the scene. And we had some hoarders that lived above us and it was a really bad situation. They had a young daughter. And one day I think she just had it and started to play with matches and torched the place up.
Wow, that sucks. I hope no one was hurt.
It sucked for the parents because their hoard was gone. I mean, it was gone. And, you know, looking back, I'm like, well, a little anarchist. Go, girl. Like, she needed to have people come and save her, and that was how she did it. So,
wow.
You know, for us, we had just some axe pick holes in our ceiling, a little bit of water damage, and we were sitting on her bed. And I look at her and I go, let's move. And she's like, where? And I'm like, I mean, I remember it like it's yesterday. I'm like, New York City. And she just looks at me. She's like, we've been there, done that. Now, mind you, we're in our late teens. Our been there, done that was like maybe four times in our lives driving the longest way possible to New York because we didn't know how to read a map and that's all you had. So that was the extent of been there, done that. And I was like, well, where do we go? And she's like, California, San Francisco. And I'm like, San Fran where? Now, my limited geography, I knew where UCLA was because I was like, I need to go to UCLA.
Damn right you do. That's my hood now. UCLA. Woo.
Right? That's all I knew. And I'm like, okay, where the hell is San Francisco? She's like, Northern California. My aunt lives there. We can go stay with her. I'm like, sick. Now, mind you, we'll go back to Maximum Rock and Roll. So I had been a reader of MRR. I knew about Blacklist Mail Order. I knew about Epicenter Zone Collective Record Store. I'm like, that's where it is. Sick. We worked for a little bit, like a month and a half. I stored all my stuff at this woman, Jane's, and I think I had like $800, no winter coat, and a backpack, a pillow, and we bought Greyhound bus tickets. She and I hop on a Greyhound bus. We go to Chicago to see our buddies in the band Local H.
Local H, bound to the floor, yep. Man.
Yep. We hung out with those cats. We went to the Hare Krishna temples, got fed, hung out with all those cats.
Wait. Actually, got fed, meaning got fed, they provided free food for you?
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. Or to quote you, that's sick.
Yeah, it was cool. Safe space to go when you're a young, you know, riot girl punk rocker. And back then, we had no fear. No fear. I was a female teenager. I think I was just over 18. I was a little, probably 18 and a half. I took a backpack, a pillow, all my money, and I got on a stinky Greyhound bus with my best friend. Like, I look back now and I'm like, I am a freaking nutcase.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, well, that's how I feel right now when I go to, and this is an analogy where yours is far more gritty, but now when I go on roller coasters, I'm scared. And when I was younger, I wasn't. I'm scared and I'm in pain because I guess my mortality is right in front of me. But when you're younger, you're just like, fuck it. Let's do it. Cool. Great.
Yeah. And you're so right. And that's exactly what it was. I mean, untouchable, invincible. Let's go.
Let's do it.
And we touched down in San Francisco. Her aunt took us in and about a week later was like, hey, guys, time to go. And we're like, what? So we got a rad little apartment up on Portola. But I will tell you this. When we touched base, we went to her aunt's, dropped our stuff. And the first place that I hit was Epicenter Zone Record Collective, which also had Blacklist Mail Order in the back. And then the other place was Maximum Rock and Roll.
Is Blacklist the color what helped inspire Crimson, which is a color?
No.
Ooh, that's some real... That's a stretch, I know, but that's what I just thought of. So I figured I'd ask you.
That's okay. That's an intelligent thought process. I wish the story for Crimson was that, you know, exciting. But
we'll touch on that in part two. But I want to hear, we have a few minutes left of part one. Tell me more. Because, again, I'm going to give Maximum Rock and Roll a shout out. And I'm actually going to give Lookout Records a shout out for that region as well.
Forgot about Lookout.
Oh, well, Lookout. It's great. I read, actually, on my honeymoon, the book about it by Larry Livermore, and it was a really interesting story. So shout-outs to Op Ivy, Green Day, and about 130 other bands. Continue. Hello.
Hi.
Oh, sorry. We're still here. We're still rocking it. So tell me more about some Maximum Rock and Roll, some NorCal, and then we'll take a short break.
Yeah, so I was out there and I ended up volunteering at all three places.
What?
And yep. I was a reviewer. I did a lot of crust punk, 7 inches.
Crimpshine, is that how you pronounce it? How do you pronounce it?
Crimpshine. Yeah. That's one of the bands. Yep. Like, I was really into that. And I got a lot of the like overseas stuff. Things from Italy and, you know, Croatia, like weird places I had never even thought that I'd ever talk about in my life. And here they are, records coming in, and, you know, it'd end up in my little box and I would do a review, and, you know, it was rad. Like, I mean, I have stories for days about my time in San Francisco. It was absolutely incredible. And, you know, when I was there, still doing music stuff, obviously, and I, worked at Bed Bath & Beyond. That was my first job, and it was the most horrible, demeaning place I've ever worked in my whole life. Tears every night.
From the customers in the store, or just from the job itself?
The customers. A lot of movie folks would come in, or, you know, people that felt entitled to just get me that pillow, and you had to, like, climb
Wait,
up a ladder.
Wait, in San Francisco, entitled people? I'm shocked.
Yeah, it was crappy, but
the most,
you know,
expensive
what? It was
city
gig
in the country. Most
and
expensive.
I did it, like, wow. No shame. I'll shovel shit for a dollar. You know, I mean, I was pretty much alone with my best friend in this city, 3,000 miles away from home, and we had rent, so it was like, fine, I'm in.
Well, as an artist manager, sometimes you pay a dollar to shovel shit. So
you do.
Yeah,
you
it's
do.
Crazy.
You know, but it was cool. And when I was in high school, I was super into the arts. Like, long, long stories and awesomeness about all of that. But I figured, you know what, if I keep my hands in the art, if I'm not going to school, I'm not a failure. So I applied at the Thomas Kincaid Art Gallery. And that started off a 13-year career with Thomas Kincaid Company.
Well, we're going to actually cut it off here, take a short break where we can talk about Thomas Kincaid. And again, we could talk for hours on one topic. Like, I'm sure we could have a whole show on Maximum Rock and Roll or Lookout, or even growing up in Western Massachusetts, you have a lot to tell, which is amazing, or Chicago or any of this stuff. But we'll talk about Thomas Kincaid. We'll talk about Crimson. And I just want to give a shout out to your homie and generally happy and positive person, Kristen. I just wanted to say that right here. She was on the show too. So shout out. Stick around for this interview with Leah Yu on iDobie. Hello, we are back with Leah and Scott on Walden's Words. I hope you enjoyed those commercials. I hope you enjoyed those songs. I hope you enjoyed whatever you did during the time between the first segment and this one. Hello, Leah.
Hi.
Welcome back. I've never said that before, but welcome back. In reality, we literally just took a 14 or 15 second pause, but whatever. That's show business.
That's how we roll.
Yeah, yo. So tell me about Thomas Kincaid, and then I want to hear as much as possible about Crimson.
Yeah, we're almost to that point. So I started working for Thomas Kincaid, and basically, long story short, I met a boy from Erie, Pennsylvania, and I ended up telling the company, "Hi, I'm moving to Erie, Pennsylvania." And they were like, "Okay." I'm like, "What can I do out there for the company?" And they were like, "Nothing. We have nothing there." I'm like, "Crap. Okay." And one of the upper management guys that worked with Tom very closely had told another guy, "Hey, we're going to develop this awesome gallery network all around the country." Long story short, I applied for it and I got it. So from that point, it was 1998. And I left California. Now, mind you, I went with a backpack and a pillow. I left in a U-Haul Ryder truck, or it was a Ryder truck, box truck, and moved across the country to Pennsylvania, unpacked, touched down, and then for 2.5 years, I was on an airplane, flying all around the world and hoteling every day. I would be home basically, you know, 4 days at a time. And I was in Erie for... yeah, like 2.5 years, and said, "I'm moving home." And so they said, "Cool." And Thomas Kincaid Company was a Christian company. And people are like, "Oh, how was that?" It was freaking amazing. These people looked out for me. I mean, every time I went and said, "I'm going to school," they're like, "Here's more money. Here's a promotion. Go do this."
That's
so
awesome.
I had like 5 different jobs over the years and said, "I'm moving home." And that was 2000. And I came back to Massachusetts. I was a district sales manager. And then they asked me to do training again. So I was flying again from here. How was Crimson born? Are you ready for this?
Well, I just want to say one quick thing before that, because you touched upon the Christian thing. My last name is Waldman. I was raised Jewish. This is not going to be a religious thing. Don't worry. And I like, trust me, that's no. So I love Under Oath. I love Reliant K. And I'm definitely not Christian, so you could find good people and good music in every subsect of society. So bucks down. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
Thank you.
For me, being with all of those folks, they changed my life. Like, I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't work for that company. I learned so much, like, about business and just how you develop people, how you treat people,
yeah,
how you sell. You know, I was a sales trainer and business development specialist, so that was my gig. It was fun. So I moved home, and
now I'm ready for this story that you asked me if I'm ready for. I just needed that soapbox thing. And also, every single job you have or internship or class or whatever, regardless of whether you go into that field or not, you're going to learn something from it that could be applicable in what you do in the future. So That's
absolutely, yeah.
So box
or
number two.
What you won't do in the future.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You learn a lot. One learns a lot about what not to do or what they won't do. So, boom, boom. Crimson, I'm ready.
All right. So it's no secret. I have a lot of favorite bands, but Quicksand, One King Down, Quicksand, high favorites. And Quicksand, actually, no, not Quicksand, One King Down, was playing at this club called the Fat Cats. I had seen it somewhere. We had internet by then. And I was like, oh, I'm going. Hell yeah. It wasn't at Fat Cats. It was actually at Pearl Street in Northampton. So I rolled myself down, ready to just rip it, mosh hard, and I run into Scott Lee. I was like, dude! And I miss so much here when I was in California and Pennsylvania. So had to get caught up. We reconnected. We start hanging out. And he's like, I want to open a record store. I was like, okay. I'm like, well, I can't quit my sweet flying around the world job, but let's do it. You can run it. And when I come home, I'll sit and hang with you there. So let's do it. So we opened a record store. And I remember it like it was yesterday. His desk was over in one corner. Mine was in the other. I'm sitting at my desk and he comes around and he's like, hey, we should manage bands. And at the time he was like, you know, helping Shadows Fall, All That Remains, booking oodles of shows in the area. He had started metal, New England Metal and Hardcore Fest. So I turn around and I'm like, yeah, okay. Now, we had no idea how to manage a band. Zero. I'm like, what do you want to call it? He's like, I don't know. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I like color. I like red. Crimson.
I'm nodding. I'm nodding right now, just so you know. Like, you can't see me, obviously, but I like red. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's how Crimson was born. And if you ask me now, and people do, they're like, how did you start this? I'm like, we just did it. We had no idea what we were doing. Like, I look at my day now of all the shit I do, and I'm like, how? How did I think I could actually do this? But you know what? We jumped in feet first with All That Remains and learned a lot. We killed it. Like, we had them for the first five years, brought them to Ozfest. Like, you know, we just, it was a great school. All That Remains was our school. And then Acacia Strain was a six-piece out of the garage. Literally.
I just saw them this summer on Warped, Acacia Strain, and in San Francisco, watched their entire set.
Awesome. When was this? A few years back?
No. Yeah. This summer.
This past summer.
Yeah. Summer 2017. The last Warped that I guess wasn't the last Warped. You know, it's like, yeah. I know.
So,
oh,
yeah.
We could have a show on that. Anyway, continue.
But yeah, so that's how it all started. And, you know, like I said, we basically took a six-piece Acacia Strain out of Vincent's mom's garage, which I can almost throw a stone to their house. It's right up the street. And then Phil's mom lived 10 seconds from them. Like, we're this cute little melting pot. And I know you know this, but like, Scott building New England Metal and Hardcore Fest.
Wait, are you talking about me, Scott, or that Scott? Just kidding.
But we can pretend it's you.
Sure, I did it. Thank you, guys. Thank you, New England. I built it.
Pioneer. But, yeah. You know, we've had so many awesome bands come out of this area over the years. You've got Shadows Fall, Unearth, Acacia Strain, All That Remains, Within the Ruins. I mean, there's just so many. Killswitch Engage. And everybody's from around here, which is so cool. And that's how everything here was born. And, you know, it's funny because over the years, we've had so many bands, you know, probably 40 or 50 come through our doors. And the leave rate has been very small. So I pride myself on that, the fact that we go severely long-term with our clients.
Can you explain to someone listening right now, because I know what you mean by leave rate and I know what you mean by long-term, but what does that mean and how is that different from other artist management companies?
Well, for for us, our vision was we wanted to get into bed with artists long term. So one hit wonders, you know, picking bands up, knowing we could put them out into the marketplace, have them do something for a couple of years and then go off into oblivion, just really wasn't our gig. We were more on the how many records can we make over the next 10 years and how far can we take it? That was always our objective. So bands,
career bands
tended, so far our track record's been very good where bands stay, you know, and I'm a big proponent. The grass is rarely greener on the other side. And we've actually seen some evidence of that with a band leaving us in 2012 and, you know, having things go not so great to come back to us in 2017. So,
wow.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting. And, you know, for me, the past few years with Scott, he wanted to change direction and do a bunch of other things. Him and a few of his friends, Jason and Cody, they started SoundRank a number of years ago. And Scott just wasn't happy here. And he moved to Oregon and basically packed it all up and left. And so I retained his half of the company a few years ago. And one of the things for me that I had always wanted to do was segue into other genres. And so when it was just me, I'm like, well, I guess we're going to do that now. And so now Crimson has a pretty significant roster of hip hop artists as well.
I'm
as
looking
metal
right
and
now.
Indie.
I'm actually on your website in the roster section and I'm scrolling up and just, I mean, without clicking any of the links, it looks like you have people in hip hop and you have people in aggressive music. And obviously hip hop could still be aggressive as well. So tell me about what it's like in the hip hop world, because I actually recently started managing a rapper that I've yet to launch. We're developing him. So that's a crazy world altogether.
It is metal. I think one of the things that I've realized is that when you're in something for so long, you become just comfortable, you know, like, so comfortable. And for me, I need variety. I need challenge. And hip hop for me is a huge life influence. So I wanted to party in that genre purely because I love it. And I see areas that definitely could improve. And I feel like I want to be a part of that. And it's different. You know, I don't know who the assholes are. I don't know who the awesome people are. So every day I'm meeting new folks and, you know, just building new best friends, and it's been amazing. And
so you're greener.
I'm looking for more.
You're greener. And
so green.
And in the hip hop world, I'm learning. I mean, there's just like everything, just like we talked about in the Christian scene, there's good and there's bad. But I can tell you from a managerial standpoint, I have never seen more unprofessional intro emails in any genre than hip hop so far. So I could just say that without a shred of hesitation. But my rapper is one of the sweetest guys on my roster. So there's good and bad everywhere, isn't there?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's one of those things where I feel in hip hop, people have been burned so much or have been just like raked over the coals that they don't trust as much in metal. And just the way things are done, it's kind of crazy, you know? And for me, I love it. I'm having so much fun, so much fun. And, you know, all of our clients, they're amazing. It's definitely been harder for me to break out because, you know, calling an agent that specializes in hip hop that doesn't know me from Adam and my resume, you know, you kind of have to be like, hi, I'm legit. Hi, you know, I'm doing all of this. It's real before they're even going to do anything with you, you know? So that's definitely been a struggle for me because
proving your worth, kind of.
Yeah. Like, and I'll offer my soul, you know, I mean, I'm pushing for tours right now and I'm like, okay, in addition to, I will do all your tour marketing. I'll do all your press. I'll do laminates. I will wipe the floors, whatever is needed to get this done so that my artists can go on the road. And people are definitely subscribing to it. It's a lot more work for me.
I'm hearing a honk, by the way. I'm hearing, I don't know if you hear it too. I'm hearing like a...
Yeah, it's one of our clients and his booking agent.
Oh, hello. Well, speaking of booking agents, just so you know, I had My Children, My Bride's agent, who is a band that Leah manages, on Waldman's Words, Jonathan Wilson. So let's give him a shout out because he's a cool guy. And in regards to hip hop and proving your worth and all that, I think you can do it. If you have really good clients and you just keep hustling them, hopefully it'll get to the point where you don't need to anymore, right?
Absolutely. And I think it's imperative that folks like yourself and myself communicate and talk and say, hey, what do you have going on? You know, I just had a phone call. Matt Vigliotti called me yesterday and I said, hey, I thought about you. There's this guy that does a ton of shows up here. You need to call him. Touch base. And
that's
so while
nice
we're on the
you.
Phone, he's doing that. He's sending me links for some things. Like, you know, I'm looking out for him. He's looking out for me. He's got hip hop. I've got hip hop. Every little bit helps. You
I'm
know?
Sending you
and
something
so
right now. I've never done this on the air. So there you go. Boom. And Matt Vigliotti was on this show as well. He actually was on a show with another guy, Greg Long. We don't do the two anymore, but they had a show together. So they're one of the earlier shows. So shout out to Greg and Matt. And you and Jonathan Wilson and Kristen and James Hetfield.
Friends.
And James Hetfield. I just want to give James Hetfield a shout out too. So we only have a few minutes left. And I just want to remind, because I did talk about My Children, My Bride. They are on this year's run of the final Warped Tour. So I would love to hear, I guess, a few things about them and just any thoughts you have on Warped.
Sure. Yeah. They are on the whole tour this summer. They had their record come out in October. So we're pushing and promoting that. And I'm just about ready. I've got a few more things to do today, but I think we're pretty good, ready to go. And I'm excited. I have a long, long time relationship with Kevin and his whole crew at Warped Tour. He's you know, I've got my five friends that always have my back and, you know, always give me great advice and just never steer me wrong. And he's one of them. So I'm really grateful. Shout out to Kevin for just always being there. And
for changing the scene in general. And for if there's something to be said about punk, hardcore, ska, emo, aggressive music, even some mainstream music. I saw Kid Rock and Eminem at Warped Tour and Katy Perry. It's that dude is the pantheon.
He is. And it goes back, like I said, to the punk rock hardcore mentality. Like when I talk to Kevin about what's going on in music, he talks about the scene, you know, and it's real. And it relates to me because that's where I come from, you know. So I think that's why over the years we've just connected so well, because the mentality and mission is so there, and it's not fake. It's real. It's like the scene. What are we doing for the scene? You know, and for me, that's really important. So this summer, although it is the quote unquote final across country tour, it's an honor to have one of our artists be a part of it. You know, my fiance, he's a tour bus driver. He'll be on all of it.
Will you share that with Kristen?
And yeah, she'll be out on, I think, the first 2 weeks. So I get to see her. I'm going to be out the first week. We just extended it yesterday. So, you know, it's just going to be amazing. We have a lot of cool things going on for My Children, My Bride at their 10th. We're just about finalized on merch. So everybody needs to go check them out, give them high fives because they're back.
Yes, please. Check out My Children, My Bride at Warped at any date. It's insane that you got there on the full tour. That's a huge, huge deal. It's a hot ticket. Getting one date's a huge deal. So give it up for Leah, Jonathan, and MCMB, right?
Yeah. And, you know, this is their first full U.S. back. There was a strategy there with that. You know, them coming back, we haven't toured them around the country yet. This is it. This is the first big one.
Well, isn't there a strategy with everything as an artist manager? There should be, right?
Yes.
Right? I mean, as opposed to, fuck it.
I want people to think that I just wake up and things magically appear, though, Scott.
Well, let me tell you something, and this is a message to all people who want to pursue music as a performer, songwriter, or whatever. For every person that gets quote-unquote discovered for doing absolutely nothing, there are, I would even say, millions, and that's a legit number, who have to bust their ass constantly to make this a career. So that's soapbox number three.
Yeah, you're so right. And, you know, it's funny because for me, I try to respond to every email. And, you know, I curate the Boston stage on Warped Tour. And right now we're over like 170 submissions from all over the country. And it's hard. Like, I'm done booking, so don't hit me up to get added.
We tried with Stringer. We get it. It's hard. Yeah. It's hard. It's
but
really
it's
hard.
Heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. Like, I see this. I mean, we get 500 requests for management a year, and it's just good stuff, too. You know, it's like, it's heartbreaking how much is out there. But my advice to everyone always is don't give up. Don't stop, you know, because there is someone that might see the potential and go, let's do it. You know, like, if you could add 75 more hours in my day, I'd have a roster of 75 bands, you know, but don't give up. And if you want to be an artist manager, if you want to be a talent buyer, if you want to be a booking agent, do it.
Just you want to be a publicist. Don't, if you want to do anything in music, if you want to do anything in music, do it. Try, maintain being a good person. And if you are a good person, don't become a bad person. So there you go. There's that. But
that's words of wisdom. I love it.
I'm trying. I'm not saying that I'm Irving Azoff. I'm not. I am just trying to become the best representation of myself and just say in general that I just want to do well, and you do too, and you're doing great, and I'm really, really honored that you took the time to do this show. That's a really hashtag good wrap up for this. So how can people check out what Crimson's doing or what Leah is doing?
You can find our website at crimsonmgt.com. You can find me on Instagram under crimsonmgt. Twitter is crimsonmgt. Facebook is Crimson Management. So go to our page. I actually was just looking at it this morning, realizing I need to go play on that a lot more. So correspond, send notes, high fives. I welcome all folks from all different genres to chit chat, because you just never know who we know. So I'm definitely one of those people that welcomes correspondence.
Well, you never know who we know. So next week we've got Chris Hornbrook, who currently drums for Danny Harrison, George Harrison's son. Like I said in the intro, the Beatles are my favorite band of all time. He's also drummed for Senses Fail, who's on this year's Warped, and for legendary band Poison the Well. So I'm just really happy about this year. Every single Tuesday, 5 o'clock my time, Pacific, and 8 o'clock, Leah's time, Waldman's Word airs Sunday morning, 5 a.m. my time, where I might be up, 8 a.m. Leah's time, where she may be up. I don't know. And you could find every episode on iTunes. You could find every episode on Adobe.com. And I ask this question sometimes, Leah, what one adjective would you use to describe this episode?
Amazing.
I'll take it. I would say amazing.
Badass. We are badasses, Scott.
I'll take it. I was also thinking sincere. So thank you. So sincere, amazing badasses who who enjoy heavy music and hip hop. See? You never know.
There you go.
There you go. Have an awesome everything, and Waldman's Words loves you.
Likewise.